Welcome to the Should Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Esports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel will join us. We will go over game one of the NBA Finals. It's in the books. The Knicks with a 1-0 lead, 3 wins away from an NBA championship. So we'll talk about game two, adjustments, series price, MVP. I know JVT's got some interesting thoughts on MVP for both sides, so excited to talk to him. Boy, what a win for the Knicks. That is a championship-level win for the Knicks on Wednesday night in Game 1. To be down 14, middle of the third quarter, on the road, and to, A, wipe away that deficit, and then, B, be up 7 or 8 points with a few minutes to go. It looks like they're going to cruise to win, the Knicks were, and then fall behind again and to rally for a second time to win. Just an incredible win, a championship-level win. And look, I picked Spurs in 6 before the series. And we've seen plenty of instances. Last year is one example where a team loses game one at home and they rally, they win the series, they win game two, and then they get the series back on track. We saw it a few years ago, Boston and Golden State. Boston won game one in Golden State. Golden State won the series. Game one is not always an indicator of the rest of the series, but man, there has to be part of you just as a sports fan that thinks maybe, just maybe here, this is the Knicks year. And what a win, what a gutty win. And the reason this feels more sustainable, and again, there's plenty of examples. Spurs lost game one to Minnesota a couple rounds ago, came back, clobbered them in game two, won the series in 6. If Wemby didn't get ejected in game 4, they would have won the series in 5. That being said, man, it just feels like New York, you know, in a close game, it just feels like Brunson is more reliable getting a bucket than Wembanyama. Wembanyama was not good in game one. Couldn't make a shot. He's fading away. They didn't shoot the three well. Fox was bad. You wonder if Fox over Harper in crunch time is something they go with long term. So, you know, my rule on this one, it seems loses game one at home, you just have to turn your brain off and bet them in game two. That being said, man, the Knicks are a couple things. Knicks are a veteran team. I don't know that the Knicks are going to say, you know what, we got our win. We'll just see in game three. We're happy with the split. Plus, remember last year, the Knicks stole game one in Boston, and they were one of the few instances, one of the trend breakers, where they stole game two in Boston, too, and went back up home 2-0, and took control of that series. And lost game 3, won game 4, and ended up winning it in 6, where they won game 6 pretty comfortably. So, I wouldn't count the Knicks out here in game 2. I can't go against the trend. It would be Spurs or nothing for me in game 2, but I'm not as confident here that they just run the Knicks out of the gym and the Knicks have that satisfaction of, hey, we got our game, we'll move on. Towns was tremendous. I think I probably underrate Towns to some extent here. He's just kind of, I don't know if it's his personality, what it is about Towns. There's just something that leaves you feeling a little bit empty, and maybe that underrates him because he was really good. He gave Wembanyama a lot of trouble. He's big. He can shoot. And he is now 11-1 at DraftKings to win series MVP. Boy, I know Brunson is the star. Brunson, you know, the face of these teams is very often, when in doubt, you give it to them for MVP. And Brunson had 30 points, so it's hard to sort of sort this stuff out after one game, but Towns was every bit as valuable, if not more valuable, than Brunson in game one. So if you make the case that he's live 11-12-1 here for MVP, I could certainly buy that case here for the Knicks. And again, I don't want to just jump off ship here after one game, but if you gave me true serum right now, I'd probably pick the Knicks to win this series. I really think that was a surprising win, a gutty win, gritty win for them to erase both deficits. And I thought the biggest play of the game, I think it was 95-94 Spurs. They had overcome that 7 or 8 point deficit in the last 5 minutes or so. They were up a point. Building's going crazy. The Knicks missed a three, and Brunson kept it alive. He didn't get the offensive rebound himself, but he tipped it to, I think, Bridges. Bridges passed it back to Brunson. Brunson hit the corner three. Boom. 97-95 Knicks. They led by 2, and they never trailed again. They ended up winning by 10. Misleading final because it was a very close game. That was their biggest lead of the game, was 10. As the final margin, Spurs led by as many as 14. But can't emphasize enough what a tremendous, tremendous victory that was there for New York. Spurs laying 5.5 in game 2, total 214.5. Series price, Knicks minus $1.40, Spurs plus $1.20. As I mentioned, MVP, Brunson now odds on minus $1.05. Wembanyama plus 125, Towns is 11-1, Anunoby is 70-1, Castle's 90-1, Harper 150-1. Hearts also 150-1. Fox 200-1. No, thank you. Bridges 250-1. Champagne, I should say. I think is how you pronounce it. By the way, there's a lot of Big East guys in this tournament, in this final. A lot of guys, you know, from the Big East. Brunson, Harper, Castle, Champagne, you know, Bridges, Hart. They're really a lot of a big East presence in these finals. Champagne 400-1 at DraftKings, 600-1 at FanDuel. Didn't make 5 threes last night, so I don't know that he's going to win it. And I'm pretty much scarred from Caruso, but he at least had a big game in game one despite the loss. So I think the Spurs probably win game two. I think they probably win game two, and if they don't, man, you start to think that this could be a short series the other way. So I'm not ready to go there yet, but you have to have a lot of respect for what the Knicks not only did last night, but have done over this run here. Just a dominant run, now 12 wins in a row, and they keep the streak alive all by double digits, which seemed impossible. When they're down 14, when it was 75-61 Wednesday night, boy, what would you have said to if someone told you, hey, not only are the Knicks going to win this game, but they're going to win it by double digits? It's almost impossible, but remarkable comeback, a couple of comebacks, and to just showed a lot of heart. And yeah, I trust their ability to get a bucket down the stretch here with Brunson and the ball in his hands more than anyone with San Antonio. So we'll see if San Antonio is up for the fight in game two. I would expect them to be. I'd expect Wembanyama to be better. And who knows, maybe we get a long series and maybe the Spurs still win it, but it's you got to have some sense here, at least I do, that the Knicks, boy, they got a little karma here. It's their season, whatever you want to call it. It's their year. It feels like it's now or never for the Knicks, especially with the way the West is breaking, where the Spurs are only going to get better. OKC is only going to stay, you know, all their picks and all their young players, they're only going to get better as long as they stay healthy in the playoffs. Jokic is still there. Luka's still there. It feels like this is kind of now or never here for the Knicks. This is a chance to steal a championship, or I don't know, a year from now, 2 years from now. I know it's a really good core, and I probably wouldn't have said this a year or two ago. I definitely wouldn't have, but maybe this is a chance to steal a championship, or I'm not sure how many chances they're going to have here to steal championships. So again, I'm not going to get against the trend. These teams that steal game one on the road usually get destroyed in game two, and it's a pretty tried and true method here, tried and true trend, where these teams just have a hard time getting up for game two, not getting up for, but just being competitive in game two. When you steal game one, I don't know if it's the satisfaction that sets in, the desperation on the other end with the team that's down 0-1 at home, whatever it is, it's been a pretty powerful trend over the years. And I'd expect that to continue, but it's really, really hard to lay points against this Knicks team with the way they're playing. And they're just good on both sides of the ball right now. They really are. They're really just really well-coached, really balanced. A lot of guys that can beat you. And the Spurs don't have a lot of guys. The one thing, like, you can attack Brunson defensively. The Spurs don't have that one guy that you can just give him the ball and he can expose Brunson defensively. The Spurs don't really have that. So we'll see how the rest of the series plays out. I would expect, next time we're talking, previewing game three on Monday, it's 1-1 and we're looking at a long series. But it's, again, hard to completely count out this Knicks team any given game here. 12 wins in a row, all by double digits. Really, really remarkable here what the Knicks have done. I mean, I think this team was down 2-1 to Atlanta. It's really hard to believe. So we'll see what JVT thinks here coming up. We'll get his thoughts. Series price, game two, adjustments, MVP. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we're back. Should Have Bet More podcast. Hardwood handicappers, money moves, a pod to the future, the list, ESPN Las Vegas, the list goes on, and he's kind enough to give us some time now. Jonathan Von Tobel, JVT, appreciate you coming on, man. I will start with this. That was a championship-level win by the Knicks, game one. To be down 14, erase that. Up 8, 4 or 5 minutes to go. Looks like they're going to win, to fall behind again and then rally once more, man. That was a gutsy, ballsy win. Call it whatever you want. The Knicks lead 1-0. How's it going, man?
It's going pretty well. I would agree. Game was freaking awesome. So hopefully we get all of these like this. These finals were already really intriguing because you get these two. First off, we're going to get our 8th unique champion in 8 years, which is always really fun because you just get these other teams, all these different teams. You get two good stories, and then you get a really good game with really good stars. I'm with you. I mean, that was impressive because this team had been blowing everybody out, and you thought, all right, Well, they run into a first legitimate defense of their playoff run, and here they are down by double digits in the second half. Maybe this is exactly what we expected, and for them to come back and to do it the way they did with pretty much all of the big names contributing, right? Karl-Anthony Towns was fantastic in that game for the first three quarters, kept them afloat, especially that big third quarter. Josh Hart was all over the place with those offensive rebounds. I don't know if you saw what he said to Mitchell Robinson under the stanchion because he was mic'd up. He goes to Mitchell Robinson. He tells him, "You get rebounds. I get, like, I think he called them back-breaking rebounds or something like that, like game-changing rebounds," which is true. Like, it's exactly what he does. And then they all do enough. OG Anunoby, we shouldn't forget his flurry. I think it was like late third, early fourth. And then, of course, all of them holding up Brunson, who had a bad game, to allow him to close it out. It was a brilliant performance from them, man.
Yeah, and I thought the biggest play of the game, I think it was 95-94 Spurs lead. Knicks missed the three. And Brunson didn't get the offensive rebound, but he did enough to get his a hand on it and tip it to another Knick. I think it might have been Bridges. Threw it back to Brunson. He hit the three. Knicks take the lead by two and never look back. I thought that was a huge play. I thought that the Spurs got the ball back with the lead last couple minutes. Now they ended up losing by 10, which is kind of misleading. That was the biggest Knick lead of the game. I thought that was probably, to me, the biggest play of the game.
No, because you're missing. See, the social media thing is they're going to call this game a blowout because the final score was double digits. So, no, it was a blowout, and it was a terrible game. Well, no, I'm with you. I mean, look, it was that. Like, that play kind of wrapped up what they did in this game. I mean, it was a tenacious effort from New York to come back in there. And you're right. I mean, to hit that corner three, and especially given the game that he had, Brunson. I mean, he was not playing well. And in its totality, it wasn't really great, right? 30 points on 31 shots. Mitch Johnson in the postgame presser, because he was asked, like, how did Brunson get his stuff? And I'm paraphrasing, but he said, like, well, you know, he had 30 points on 31 shots. It's not like we were awful against him. You know, like, we need to do some things better, especially in the fourth quarter. But really good effort from him, and the way to come back and actually put together what he usually has done throughout his career as a Knick, which is just close these games out.
And what would concern me a little bit from the Spurs side, it just doesn't look like they have a lot of great options offensively to really attack and expose Brunson. And other than Brunson, they don't have really a lot of weak defenders.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't want to overreact. We always know how this goes. Team steals game one at home. On the road, they usually get blasted in game two. First off, I'm not sure if this happens with this Knicks team. They stole game one last year in Boston, and they were one of the outliers. They actually won game two in Boston after being way behind. They're a veteran team. I can't go against that trend. It would be Spurs or nothing in game two, but, boy, it's starting to feel like it's the Knicks' year. Is that how you feel, or that's a little overreactionary?
I mean, no, I wouldn't disagree at all. I think the strongest point you just made was just that about attacking Brunson. I mean, De'Aaron Fox was awful in that game, and so you wonder, especially in that fourth quarter, when that's when it's supposed to happen, right? If you're in a fourth quarter in a tight game, hey, all right, let's pick on the weakest defender and let's have one of our guards go after him. I mean, CJ McCollum was able to do it, but De'Aaron Fox couldn't, so that's a problem for San Antonio. Now, I do wonder, one of the adjustments you make is, does De'Aaron Fox ride the pine in some of these fourth quarters moving forward, and is it Dylan Harper who's going to be able to try to do that against Jalen Brunson? Because Harper was great at the beginning of that game, and then they kind of went away from him as the game went along. So you wonder if that's going to be one of the adjustments that the Spurs make. But I'm with you, and I'll add another one here that I think is not troubling, because he isn't obviously maybe the best player in the league right now, so you would expect that he bounces back. But Victor Wembanyama had some trouble with Karl-Anthony Towns. Like, Towns was driving on him and using his size. He was kind of holding him off the glass. He was doing as well as you could. And unlike some of these other bigs, like unlike Jokic or something like that, right, he was making Wemby work defensively in a really big way, using a ton of his size and getting after him. And some of those big, big lineups, right, with Mitchell Robinson and Karl-Anthony Towns really worked. Towns had a really good finish on a drive when I think it was Robinson had sealed Victor Wembanyama in the lane. Like, they were working really well together, and I think that's another thing. I don't think Wembanyama is going to be terrible throughout this series, but the fact that you were able to go out there and have success in the Wembanyama minutes if you were the Knicks with Karl-Anthony Towns, that's a really big problem for them.
Towns, I think, I don't want to say he's underrated. I think I've been guilty of underrating him. Just, you know, he is a tremendous shooter for his size. I don't know, have you looked at Towns differently, or you think he's been generally underrated this whole time? Well, what's your thoughts on Towns?
Oh, yeah, he's totally been underrated. I mean, and it goes with, I think, it depends on how you look at it, too. I think our version of rated, you know, overrated, underrated, it also does come from, like, social media, which really isn't real life. If you've actually asked people around the league, he would get his respect, especially those that cover it or those that work inside the league. So it just depends on where you're polling. But I'll say this to kind of zoom out and tie it into this. We do on Money Moves, we do our finals MVP ladder, where I kind of rank, like, the the MVP candidates for the series after every single game to see like maybe where the market is and maybe if there's some value in betting some guys. I don't really care about the close of the fourth quarter. I think Karl-Anthony Towns right now is in the lead for MVP. I mean, they were awful. They couldn't shoot the ball. Their offense was sputtering. He kept them in that game the entire time. He was great defensively against Victor Wembanyama. He was grabbing some big offensive rebounds, was scoring, was playing within his game, kept himself out of foul trouble for the most part. He actually got lucky. Remember in the third quarter, there was a stretch where he was kind of picking up some fouls, but they had actually switched it. I think it was Mikal Bridges. There was a sequence under the basket where initially they had ruled that it was Cat on the foul, but they gave it to Bridges, so he got lucky there. But I think Cat is in the lead right now after one game for Finals MVP, and I think he's going to have a really big series. That was my thought coming in. I've got him at 22-1, and I still think like 12-13-1, which is out there, is still perfectly playable for him if you think the Knicks are going to win.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. I've seen 11-1 at DraftKings. That's probably not the best number just because it's the first number I looked at. Brunson sure. Odds on minus 105, Wemby plus 125, Towns 11-1, and Anobi 70-1. With Wembanyama playing a subpar game, is there anyone from the Spurs side you think could possibly steal it if they were to win the series?
You'll like this one because this is juicy.
You
burned for the Caruso?
Yeah.
Well, this is a Caruso-esque play right now, and actually it's even bigger, but let's see, 16 points, 10 rebounds, and nearly half of the Spurs made three-pointers yesterday, 5 of the 11.
Champagne?
Julian Champagne is 600-1 over at FanDuel. How is he, at this point, again, so for anybody who's like, you wouldn't win it. If you were ranking Spurs to win Finals MVP right now, just after game one, he would at the very least be second. There's no other player that you would put above him at this point right now. So he is going to, and Zach Cohen has him to lead the series in three-point makes. He's going to be their best three-point shooter. He is 6'7", kind of big. He's going to be one of the options against Karl-Anthony Towns defensively whenever Victor Wembanyama's not out there. They're going to need him to play big minutes because they need some size. The Knicks are just so big that he's going to be out there. And to have a double-double and make half of your team's made threes, if I told you that wasn't Julian Champagne, you'd be like, dude, that guy's got to be like 20-1. And instead, he's Julian Champagne and he's 600-1 because Victor Wembanyama's on his team.
Hey, 600-1. I mean, what's the line for the office? Give me 10,000-1 odds. Right. Take it.
And, we're getting close to that.
600-1 is pretty tasty. Who'd you like before the series? What'd you pick? I picked Spurs in six. I was torn between 6 and 7. I went with 6 originally. By the time we got to the series, I was like, you know what? I would probably go with 7, but you can't change your pick. But I was torn between 6 and 7. Ultimately, went with 6. I don't feel great about that now. Obviously, not dead after one game. But where were you? Where were you before the series?
My pre-series selection was the wimpy Knicks in 7. So I picked the Knicks and asked them to win in 7 games. So that was my selection. To the point of winning in 7, obviously that means winning in San Antonio. But we have seen, and I talked about this, and to your point about these game ones and the way this goes for these teams at home, home court has not been strong in this NBA postseason at all. We have seen multiple teams go on the road in game 7s in this postseason and win those games outright and win them comfortably. We have seen these game 1 teams at home lose these games. Right now, I have home court in the postseason. Teams are outscoring opponents at home by just under 2 points per 100 possessions in non-garbage time. So, this is, I don't think, that big of an ask for the Knicks that have taken home court now to win this series, potentially even in 7. But, yeah, Knicks in 7 was my selection before.
Would you stick with that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I wouldn't stick with it in the sense of they took game 1, so, like, maybe they can win it in 6 now. But, yeah, like, I think the Knicks – dude, they provide a lot of different intriguing issues for San Antonio. You mentioned one of them, the inability to attack Jalen Brunson. They have Karl-Anthony Towns that is going to be a matchup problem for them. You saw them try different things. They tried Champagne. It didn't work. They tried Victor Wembanyama, and they kind of struggled with it as well. Brunson, of course, is so good. Why am I blanking on the kid's name? Who's the young kid that looks like he's 10 years old for the San Antonio Spurs? Carter Bryant. They put Carter Bryant out there, and there was a sequence where he defended Brunson like 3 straight times, and you're thinking, all right, cool, we got the 6'6" kid. Like, he's going to be able to at least shut Brunson down. Nope, picked the spots, got after him every single time. Like, there's so many different things that this team can do. And then you saw the bench and the small shooter lineups work. Landry Shamet played over 30 minutes. It was nails for that team. Jose Alvarado was really good in spurts, including that ridiculous goaltend that he drew on Victor Wembanyama. This team, I think, is going to provide a lot of different issues for San Antonio. So I still think it's going to be a long series. But, yeah, I stick by the fact that the Knicks are going to win the series.
What are you looking for in game 2? Spurs laying 5.5.
I think you kind of alluded to this. You didn't like 100% say it. I would love to fly in the face of the trend of these games. I understand we've seen it a ton. Lose game 1 at home, come back and blast the other team in game 2. But I'm with you in the sense of, like, this Knicks team seems too good for that. They're not one to kind of let up. and allow a victory to happen just because they took the first one. Especially when you get that inflated number, right? We were, what, 4.5 yesterday. Now we're like 5.5 for game two. It's probably going to get to like 6, maybe even 6.5, considering the way the market likes to play these things. I'll call it a play of principle, and I'll just say that I'll believe that the Knicks can at the very least stay inside that number.
That would, boy, it's such a strong trend the other way, and I'm not like a slave to these trends, but that's one where it's just, well, it's so strong where I always use the phrase, you have to turn your brain off and just say, hey, well, this time could be different. I mean, we saw it, you know, and San Antonio has been in this position a couple ways where they got game one stolen from them against Minnesota, and they stole it against OKC.
Yep.
And they were competitive against OKC in game two, but OKC pulled away. It's such a tough trend to bet against.
For your audience, really quick, because I went back in our text conversation because I know he sent this to you. So if you include that OKC game two, 86-25 straight up, 67-43-1 against the spread. That is since the 2003 postseason game two home teams after a loss.
Yeah, that's not an easy one to bet against. By the way, do you think if OKC was healthy, they would have beaten the Spurs?
I think, yeah. I think they would have obviously had a much better chance. I mean, you go back to game seven. Dude, like, they were running isolation plays for Jared McCain. You know? Like, there was sequences where Shea was not on the floor, and he was, like, their main guy for stretches of minutes. And I love Jared McCain. I think he's an awesome player, but that's not his game at all. You know, Cason Wallace was having to do things. There was no A.J. Mitchell, no Jalen Williams. And then when Shea was on the floor, and he performed admirably, what do you have, 35 points in that game? He was just getting doubles, like, the whole time. It was a slog for that team. And don't even get us started on Chet Holmgren, obviously. So I think they obviously have a better shot. I would not guarantee it, but I would say yes. Like, if they were fully healthy, I think they could beat them.
What do you think they do with Chet? What does the OKC offseason look like?
I don't know. I mean, if you had won this title, you probably feel pretty comfortable if you're OKC of just like, yeah, we've won twice. Like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to keep pushing this forward is because this works. But after watching this last series, and again, injuries were part of it, but I don't think you overreact to Chet Holmgren's no-show against Victor Wembanyama. He's probably still on the team. My thing is, I think you probably start looking for some, like, wing help. I mean, they're kind of, like, light on the wing, like, with, like, true, like, 6'7", 6'8", like, slashing, like, 3-and-D type guy that can really help them out. And I do think that maybe that's what you try to find. Now, it's easier said than done because those are very rare to find in the NBA, and they're a commodity. But you've got the assets to go and get one, so I'd be very curious to see what they address, like, in that position, because I think that, like, small forward wing type position is one that they desperately need. Like, if you're talking about players that are we know in Thunder uniforms that are going to move on, I would make it more likely that Lu Dort is not a member of the Thunder than Chet Holmgren.
You think there's a big swing move for them? Do you buy the idea Giannis, you know, something else? What do you think? They could trade up in the draft. What do you think they do, if anything?
I mean, I think they're doing what they've been doing. I think they just kind of buy on the fringes, right? Like McCain was a really good addition. That was a very good addition. They bought low on Jared McCain, and he was fantastic. Acquiring Alex Caruso a couple of years ago with just flipping Josh Giddey to Chicago, like, that's a pretty good addition. They've done that, and that's kind of been their MO. I don't know if they're, like, big splash team at all. So I would say that I think it's just going to be a move that we all go, oh, like, that's square peg, square hole. Like, that's going to be a really good fit for them. I don't know if it's a rookie, though, because, you know, when your aspirations are winning a finals, do you really think moving up in the draft, unless you're getting, like, a DeBonsa type, is that really going to be the move that helps you out? Are you going to sacrifice assets and think that a rookie is going to help push us past where we were a season ago?
Yeah, it's a good point. Back to the finals. Anything else? We missed anything else we'd add? Series leader, the total here, 214.5 for game two. Any other thoughts here on Knicks Spurs?
Yeah, I'd say total. I was leaning really heavy toward the over in this last game, and I think I would go back to the well here and play this one for game two. It wasn't particularly slow game. It was actually kind of quick. They had like 97 possessions each. If you assume that the Spurs are going to have a slightly better day, because this is the thing about San Antonio too that's going to not, like, you know, burn them or help them. They're a very fickle three-point shooting team. You know, the games which they play well, they're shooting very well. But last night, you had the bad game. They shot only 26% from three, and as I mentioned, made 11. Julian Champagne had 5 of them. So if you keep the same pace, but some of the shooting evens out, by the way, the Knicks shot like crap too, then I think you're probably going to be in a position to get that game over the total. The efficiency overall should just be better. Because, I mean, look, Will, the best part for this is, first off, there wasn't a lot of free throws. The pace was there, and neither team really turned the ball over, and you still went under the total. I think there's a lot of indicators that you can get over the total for game two. That's the zigzag that I'd rather play. Not the side, but the total.
Has draft NBA draft betting entered your mind? Is stuff up in Vegas? I would imagine it's that stuff is hard to find. What do you like in the draft, if anything?
By the way, I did bet the NHL draft as well. I have the Field versus McKennitt, like +370. So I keep reading mock drafts and he's going like second or third. So I just need something. That's all it's based on. I don't really have anything. So I do have a couple of bets. One of the ones that's moved a little bit, not too much. I did bet AJ DeBonta to go third overall at 25-1. He's down to like 16-1 to go third. Cam Boozer is, by all accounts, very, very much lauded in front offices, especially analytics types. They really like his game. They like what he does. They like the way he fits in the NBA. And so my logic here, because I'm still very steadfast in, I think Peterson's the best prospect, and I think there's a much better shot that he's going to go number one overall. So I bet him to go first overall as well at just over 3-1. But if I'm right and Peterson goes one, for those of your audience members that don't know, Carlos Boozer is a scout in the Jazz front office, and the Jazz allegedly do like Cam Boozer quite a bit. So there are some influences there. I don't think it's an insane theory that we go Peterson, Boozer, then DeBonta for 1, 2, and 3. So that's the reason why I bet DeBonta at number 3. I'm also just not buying that he's head and shoulders the best prospect. The shooting's a little tricky, and I think that a guy like Peterson is going to be too hard to ignore.
Who has these, by the way?
BetMGM has all of them out here.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have any sleepers for the draft? Anyone? Because it's a really good draft. It's a deep draft. It's a loaded draft. Anyone? You watch a lot of college. Anyone you really like?
So the one that I keep waiting for a draft position to pop up is Michigan's Wolverine center, Ed Amara. With the love for Wembanyama, and it's not like he is Wembanyama, but you need these kind of like these athletic, long guys that can play at multiple spots on the floor. And he's got some length to him. Obviously, he's like 7'2", I think. He's very athletic, nimble around the basket, pretty solid defender in drop coverage. And I think that there's going to be a thirst chasing some of these Wembanyama types. I remember there was kind of a thirst for that when Jokic broke onto the scene, and there was a bunch of teams that were kind of sniffing around centers in the draft and trying to stock up at the 5 because they thought that this was going to be, you know, Jokic's league. And I think it's going to be something similar here. And Mara's got all of the archetypes. The first mock draft post-combine had him outside of the top 10, and then after the combine, they had him going 7 or 8 to the Hawks, if I remember correctly. I think he's going to rise pretty quickly, so I want to find some draft positions on him, but I would look out for him. And I'd also point out, I don't know if this is going to happen or not, I'd be looking for a yes-no top 10 on Kingston Fleming's out of Houston. I think he's pretty small man, very demure guard, and there's a stretch of guards in that portion of the draft that I think are going to be more – like, would you rather have Braden Burries, who's younger and bigger and has some upside, or would you rather have Flemings? And I think a lot of teams are going to go in the direction of some upside. Who's the kid that's coming out of Louisville as well, the big guard that they have too, that his name escapes me. But, like, those are the types that I think are going to start to go ahead of Flemings.
Is this right? The draft is Tuesday night, June 23rd. It's on a Tuesday this year? For years it was on a Thursday, and last year they moved it. Maybe it was 2 years ago they moved it to a Wednesday. I can't remember it saying.
Well, are they still 23rd? Doing the two-day thing?
Yeah. So June 23rd, the first round, June 24th, the second round. That would be a Tuesday.
I'm not much of a complainer, as you know. But I will complain about one thing the NBA needs to fix. They got to fix the league year thing. Like, it is the stupidest thing in the world when guys get drafted by a team and they're wearing the hat, but they really are drafted by the other because, it's been so long. That's all I need. I just need that figured out, please. That's it. That's all I ask.
Yeah, I actually like the small gap between if you got a game 7 in the finals, it would be that Friday night, June 23rd. And again, Friday night, game 7 is just kind of odd too. But Friday night, June 23rd would be game 7, and then June 23rd, 4 days later, would be the draft, which Tuesday for a draft is just strange.
Yeah, that is weird. Maybe, and it's not like they're against the Stanley Cup final. That'll be over by then too, so weird.
No, I'm not sure. And for years, like I said, for years it was always a Thursday, but hey. It'll be here before you know. That's always it is fun too when you get go from the NBA Finals ending to the draft and then kind of gets you ready for
free agency.
Yeah, that is a fun week or two. All right, man. Anything else? Champagne, we're betting 600-1 to win Finals MVP. Have you bet?
Hell,
it, by the way,
yeah. I'm trying to find it out here because that's the thing. This is the annoying part about Vegas and Nevada. For those who don't know, because all of you are very spoiled when it comes to what they offer. The books out here in Nevada will not hang up adjusted finals MVP odds. Some won't even hang up finals MVP. There is a prominent book that did not hang up finals MVP at all out here that I will not name. but they won't hang the adjusted ones. So you'll have to just bet pre-flop and then just sit back and wait. So I might, before the next game, drive across the dam out here to Arizona so I can get something in at 600-1 for Champagne. But it is the MVP betting, Conn Smythe betting, it drives me nuts every year because they will not hang adjusted odds out here. And I don't know if it's a gaming thing or what, but it has always been a plague out here in Nevada.
Yeah, that's strange. I mean, people are dying to give you the money. Book the 600-1.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Not going to win.
I want to bet 600-1. Like, just give it to me.
Yeah. All right, JVT. Appreciate it, man. Where can we find you?
You said it at me, JVT, up on all social media. ESPN Las Vegas, Money Moves, Pod to the Futures, Harvard Handicappers, and that's about it.
All right, rate, review, subscribe. Thanks to Jonathan Von Tobel. We'll be back on Monday. See you then.